Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the July 24, 2016 session, focusing on Hosea chapter 1, verses 1 through 10. What's in a name? I'm David Cassidy.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
We're also joined tonight by Darian Duckworth. Now, Darian, of course, has been with us before, and if you're a listener of the podcast, you've heard Darian with us before. But if she's new to you, let me do a bit of introduction. She is the pastor of the First United Methodist Church in West Point, Mississippi. You can learn more about Darian at her website and read her blog at darianduckworth.com. Welcome back, Darian.
Thanks, David. Good to be back with you guys.
Now, I understand that West Point is fairly new for you, that you've recently moved there. And so I'm going to ask you the important question that all of us have on our minds, which is, what's a great place to grab a bite to eat in West Point?
Well, that's an easy question that has one answer to it, because West Point doesn't have a lot of places to eat out, but we do have Anthony's Good Food Market is appropriately named Good Food because it's really, really good. In fact, on game day weekends in Starkville at Mississippi State University, where a certain other podcaster teaches and lives, it is well known that in West Point you cannot get a reservation at Anthony's on a game day weekend because people from Starkville drive up and usually book the whole place. So, don't have many places to eat, but we've got Anthony's Good Food. So, where I go weekly, sometimes awesome. More than weekly.
Yeah. Well, it's making me hungry already, but we're really glad you're back with us, Darian, for this evening.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
All right. Well, now this episode is centering around a discussion of a portion of the Old Testament book of Hosea. We're going to spend a couple of episodes looking at Hosea. Daniel, would you be able to get us started with a bit of insight on this text?
I'd be glad to. First, I want to tell a story. Julie Pennington Russell is the fairly new pastor of First Baptist Church of Washington, D.C., and she tells the following story. A few years ago at their house, the family was going through, you know, that typical school morning routine, packing up lunches, making breakfast, getting clothes on, that sort of thing. Their daughter Lucy, who was 7 at the time, asked if she could light a candle on the dining room table to make breakfast a little fancier. Sounds like one of my kids. So Julie's husband, Tim, supervised the lighting of the candle, then went to check something on his computer while Julie stirred the eggs on the stove. A few minutes later, their son Taylor, who was 11, and the little neighborhood girl, whom they drove to school every morning, they both burst into the kitchen crying and hollering, "Lucy's on fire! Lucy's on fire!" Julie says it was one of those surreal moments. Both she and her husband flew into the dining room, and sure enough, Lucy was running around in circles with the top of her head, in Julie's words, blazing like a tiki torch. She'd leaned a little too close to the candle, and her hair ignited. Julie reached her first and immediately smothered her head with her bathrobe. She did an examination, saw that her skin hadn't been burned, it was just her hair. So they relaxed, breathed that big sigh of relief. She was okay, thank goodness. But as you may or may not know, there are a few smells in the world more revolting than that of burning hair. Julie says her son Taylor, who has a rather sensitive nose, became sick right then and there. The sight of that immediately prompted the little neighborhood girl to then become sick. It was a chain reaction nightmare. And Julie says this, "There I was in my scorched bathrobe on that very messy kitchen floor, picking ash out of my daughter's hair, thinking to myself, how did things go completely nuclear before 7 a.m.?
Wow.
It's a great story. I'm laughing because I've been there. Maybe you are too. But I was reminded of that story when I was studying the context for Hosea's prophecy. Just when the people of Israel think they're making some headway, somehow it gets worse. Just when Hosea thinks he's making some headway, it gets worse. Hosea is a prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel in the mid-700s BC. Of the 6 kings during this time period, 5 of them were assassinated. Corruption was rampant. The northern kingdom was plagued with skirmishes with its southern rival, Judah. To make matters worse, they were about to be overtaken by the Assyrians. These wars took a financial toll, which led the rich ruling class to exploit the poor in order to pay these debts. Hosea has something to say about that. We'll soon find out. But added to all this political and economic turmoil, Canaanite religion, with its worship of Baal, that had made its way in as well. So within this context, God calls Hosea to preach. What's more, God calls Hosea to get married as well. The bride God has chosen is an interesting one, Gomer. Now, Gomer, in the words of the character Daniel in that great movie, The Other Sister, well, she has a reputation. She is, to quote God, a wife of whoredom. So Hosea risks it all and marries the girl. But Hosea is unlike other prophets. Here in chapter 1, at least, he is silent. Rather than preaching God's word, he proclaims God's faithfulness through his actions. He marries a promiscuous woman as a sign of the unfaithfulness of Israel to God. But just as Hosea does not divorce Gomer, God does not divorce us. Hosea, whose name means salvation, seems to announce a hopeful new day for restored relationship with God. And that's a little background on our text for today.
So, Daniel, that was quite a story about a family that everything goes a little crazy before anyone has probably had their morning cup of coffee, which is terrifying to think about. But using that story about a family, it just furthers my intrigue about the fact that Hosea has this whole analogy, this metaphor of family, marrying Gomer, the children's names throughout the prophets. There's all this connection with the land. And it's just wild that God, and it's also so appropriate, though, that God would be speaking to the prophets and speaking thus to the people about by using this metaphor of family, because it's something everybody identifies with. And the whole time I was reading this, I couldn't help but think about this TV show that I just absolutely love on Netflix called Bloodline. And it's about this wild family, and they seem like really, really bad people. And the tagline is, "We're not bad people, but we did a bad thing." And so when I'm reading Hosea, I keep thinking about this family, every episode, even with all the drama that develops, it keeps going back to, but we're still family and we watch out for each other even when we do bad things. And I see a similarity here with Hosea, no matter what happens and no matter what he's asked to do in terms of his marriage and naming the children, he's obedient to it, and they have this that God's just relating to them through the family. And it just makes me think of Bloodline and how that analogy probably registered with a lot of hearers of the word back in that day, and they understood what was going on.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, Darian. There's a lot of family dynamics going on here. The fact that, if I'm not mistaken, the text says, that Gomer, she bore a daughter, she bore a son, but one of the times it says she bore him a son. Mm. So a lot of scholars have wondered whether there continued to be, you know, unfaithfulness even into the marriage. So that would make these sort of, you know, half siblings. There's a lot of family dynamics there. There's the names, Lo Ruhamah and Lo Ami, you know, which mean Lo Ruhamah, not to be pitied, and Lo Ami, not my people. I mean, those are harsh names to give your kids, but shows the extent to which God's people were unfaithful to him. I referenced Hosea's name being salvation. There's just a lot of family dynamics. And there's this other, it may be a small thing, but it intrigued me. When the author first introduces Gomer to us, this would be, let's see, verse 3. "So he went and took Gomer, daughter of Diblaim." And I thought, that's interesting that despite her unfaithfulness, despite her sexual past, she's still somebody's daughter. She's still a human being. I may be reading into that, but the family dynamics just run all throughout this story, this first part at least. And it's really something to think about.
Whenever I hear this story, and listening to Daniel's introduction, I come at it from a different perspective because Darian really picked up on the family aspect, and I love the way that you did that. And Daniel, you talked about how at the beginning it mentions Gomer being a daughter, so that there's some connection there, despite all the horrible things that the Bible says about her. I think it's the pop culture guy in me. I can't help but think about the great Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Oklahoma, and the character in Oklahoma, Ado Annie. And I don't know if you've seen it, if you've ever seen the play, you know anything about it, but she's got one of my favorite songs about being a girl who just can't say no. And she sings this whole song. Every boy that comes her way, she's willing to flirt and kiss and go off with them. And so she has this whole song about, I'm just a girl who can't, C-A-I-N-T, right? Can't say no, can't seem to say no at all. She hates to disappoint a beau when he's paying a call. And I think about that because as I'm reading Hosea, as I listen to the story of Hosea, the whole living out the parable of God's faithfulness and God's the unfaithfulness of God's people, I think of that as sort of like our song, that we're all just Ado Annie. We're just people who can't say no. We're people who can't say no to the expectations, the opinions, the demands of others. We give ourselves to others for their enjoyment and for their approval. And often we find ourselves discarded or abused. We are always seeking other people's validations of us to give us meaning, to show us our worth, and in the end, we're left high and dry and moving on to somebody else. And we're blind, completely blind, to the meaning and worth that we already possess simply by being a child of God. So this image of a loose woman who can't commit to one person, or just being a girl who can't say no, I always think of that when I think of the church and the mm-hmm. or God's people in the context of Hosea. And I'll add a link so everybody can click on and sing along with it.
Well, I mean, what you're saying is right. I mean, we all like to think, you know, Gomer as the other, but not as us. But she is us and we are her.
And it's not an uncommon theme. I mean, it was through the prophets. Isaiah makes reference to that. Jeremiah says, all of you are just a bunch of wild whores jumping after any little god hiding behind rocks. It's very unflattering. And it's very it offends our sensibilities today in terms of how we, you know, want to think of women and portray women as human beings. But nevertheless, I mean, that's the imagery that's used. Yeah. And it's not limited to, you know, the story of Hosea.
And I love how this passage ends with the phrase, children of the living God. And after all of the faithlessness of the people, and of course the prophets always go back to that bit of hope at the end, but after telling this whole story, all of these names, giving us the rundown of Hosea's family and his life, then in the end, it comes back to all of God's children. And like you were saying, Bert, that all of God's children matter. And I can't help but think about the current social situations and current events going on in our world, about how much people, about how every life matters, and regardless of gender, sexual orientation, race, socioeconomic status, Hosea brings us back to what the Lord is saying to him and to us, that each and every life matters. And that calls us to ask, you know, what is our responsibility in making sure that every voice is heard and that every person knows their worth in God and that they are called by name. Even if it is a name like Gomer's or Hosea's children and what they mean, as we've been saying, God still calls them and still loves them and is faithful to them in the midst of the faithlessness.
I've been thinking about that too, Darian. I think that's a great way to put it. You know, as we're recording, we're, you know, our hearts and minds are with the shootings that took place in Minnesota and in Baton Rouge and in the police killings that just happened in Dallas, and details are still coming out. So, you know, we probably shouldn't talk specifics because those may be inaccurate later on. But I've thought, you know, what am I to do? How can I contribute to this understanding of us all being children of the living God? Because, you know, when I look at my own relationships, I have good friends of color who are loving, honest, yet concerned and fearful people. And I have good friends who are law enforcement officers who are loving, honest, caring people. In fact, one of our newest members of our church is a law enforcement officer who is one of the kindest and most loving people I know. So how do we deal with this disconnect that we're feeling? I don't know. But I think, first of all, what's clear, I think, is that we're broken. We have people of color afraid of law enforcement. We have police officers who put their lives on the line every day, and they feel disrespected and pointed at as if they're the problem. And so what happens is we you know, as is often the case, we take sides. We have people taking sides, us against them. But Hosea doesn't let us do that. I mean, Hosea's witness is that we're all children of the living God, so we cannot look at this or any other situation as this us versus them proposition, because the truth is, this is all of us. I mean, it breaks our collective hearts that our black and brown friends are afraid for themselves and for their children, and it breaks our collective hearts that our friends in law enforcement, who, let's be honest, are overworked, overstressed, underpaid, often undervalued, that they should have to be afraid to go to work and do a job protecting us, you know, a job that they've sworn to do and frankly want to do. So, I mean, what am I getting at here? If we take seriously that we are the body of Christ, then when our brothers and sisters are hurting, we should be hurting too. I think that's the first step. As odd as it sounds, to have our hearts broken over this. For, you know, we so often want to get involved, have some action. What do we want to do? Well, first, I think it's to allow our hearts to be broken over the brokenness in this world. Well, then, if we must have action, how do we find our way forward? You know, I think we follow Christ's example to not speak past one another, but, you know, as Christ did, sit down by the well, so to speak, and have a conversation, to listen to one another, not as the enemy or as the other, but listen to one another as a brother or sister, a beloved child of the living God. And call me naive. I've been called naive before, but I think this is one area where the church can be a leader. We know how to do this, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in our churches, there are black and white, rich and poor, gay, straight, Republican, Democrat, you name it. And so what holds us together? When we are church at our best, what holds us together is not a political ideology or some humanly constructed theological orthodoxy. What holds us together when we are at our best is our common humanity and our faith in Jesus Christ. When we realize that we are not so different from one another, I think we are able to see ourselves in one another and then to truly listen to one another. I think that's where we start. I don't know. What do y'all think?
I've got, especially here in an academic environment, many friends, colleagues, students who are involved in the Black Lives Matter movement. And at the same time, like you, Daniel, I've got friends who are police officers, African-American friends who are police officers, and white friends who are longtime police officers. And it's a we've got to address the structural way of how we train police officers to act and respond and deal with fear, deal with perceived threats, and not focus on any one officer as that's the problem. Because many times it's decent people who are in horrible situations and respond the only way they know how and the only way they've been trained. That is not, please hear me, that is not to excuse or to make excuses for what happens. And it is to hold accountable. But I think the gospel perspective and what y'all are saying about understanding as we're all God's children is the moment that we've identified with the other on the oppressed side, which is an important, we have to do that, but we can't allow our enemy to become the other and dehumanize and demonize them as well. But it gets down to what you're saying about all of us are God's children.
I look at the, I mean, we were talking about the last part of this passage in Hosea, but if we go back to the very first part of it, right? I mean, the whole reason that we have Hosea as this prophet bringing a word from God is because God was upset, right? God was not happy. And so I guess I hear the conversation we're having, and we're in this text with Hosea. So what was God unhappy about then? And does that give us clues about how to live today as the church?
Well, for one, I mean, there was a lot of, as I mentioned in my Bible background, there was exploitation, there was warring madness with you know, one nation against another. There was corruption, folks taking advantage of one another and not living in positive relationships with one another. And I think, as enlightened as we think we are these days, a lot of our social ills, including what we've been talking about here on tonight's podcast, I think comes down to forgetting who we are as God's beloved community and not living in positive and right relationship with one another, mutually beneficial. I mean, we still take advantage of one another. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to oversimplify it, David. I don't know if I'm answering what you were really asking there, but
You are, but I guess can we put it positively? What does God want us to do? What did God want the people to do then, and what does he want us to do?
Well, I think you just jump right over to the other prophet, Micah, right? To do justice, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. Now, how do you do that? You know, it's just a constant sense of frustration that obviously Hosea felt, and obviously I think is the message of Hosea, that this is frustration on God's part with us. That's not putting it positive.
But I do think that the Micah passage you quoted is putting it positively, right? I mean, that's a clear message. And to me, part of the appeal of that is that if we walk humbly with our God, to me, that relieves us of some of the perceived need sometimes to act on God's behalf, to speak for God. I mean, God's perfectly capable of taking care of things God's self. Might it be if we were more humble as people of faith in our communities, in this culture, that it would be easier for us to see the value of everyone? Because ultimately, you know, if there's a problem with somebody, it's not mine to fix. It's not mine to judge. It's not mine to be God with. Instead, to walk humbly with our God, does it mean at some level that we let God be God? And we play our role, which is to love and to care, you know, to honor these relationships with our neighbor.
Well, yes, it is a good question, David. You asked, well, what does God want from us in terms of better relationship, treating one another well, and that sort of thing? I think, I don't know, if we can take a, again, I don't mean to oversimplify it, but if we can take a cue from Hosea here, who, at least in the first chapter, doesn't say anything. So maybe what God requires of us is less talk, less pontificating, less preaching even, and more action, more concern for the poor, more caring for our brothers and sisters, more listening, more understanding. I mean, it's trite, but it's more about what we do than what we say. And I mean, Jesus talks about that in the New Testament, you know, that folks will know us by how we act, not necessarily all that we say.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, it reminds me of in Matthew, I believe it's in Matthew 22, we have the Pharisees who are confronting Jesus and trying to test him. And they say, you know, which commandment in the law is the greatest? And, you know, and Jesus ends up summarizing the law into, you know, really two commandments, right? He says, and this is quoting, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Amen. And I think we can certainly hear Hosea in Jesus' comments here as well. Well, thank you all for this conversation. It's timely, it's relevant, and it's difficult. But thank you for sharing it this evening. And I know we'll come back for the next episode and continue in Hosea. So I look forward to that conversation.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.